Okay, well, you can probably guess what I am fixing to say. So here we go. Turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. We are working our way through the book of Devarim, or Deuteronomy. And, of course, we are now at the place where I say the verse is chapter 11, verse 26. And the Parsha is called Re'eh because that is the very first word in this one. And this, of course, is Moshe speaking. He says, "Behold, Re'eh!" Or if you want to check it out, or see is how it's rendered sometimes. But I set before you this day a blessing and a curse. So the you here is plural. I'm setting before you all on this day a blessing and a curse. Now, it's interesting here, and I'm going to be picky about the translation because I think it's kind of interesting. The way this is phrased is important. The blessing that you shall hearken unto the commandments of Yehuyarel, which I command you to this day. Now, some renderings, the Bible I'm looking at here actually renders that a blessing if, im. But that's not what it says in the Hebrew. It says a share, a blessing that. In other words, a blessing because you shall hearken unto the commandments of Yehuyarel, which I command you this day. In other words, it's on a condition, but you get the blessing up front. So we don't wait to see whether or not you're going to carry out the if part. It's just blessing up front. On the other hand, it says, and the curse, if, now this time it is im, if you do not or shall not hearken unto the commandments of Yehuyarel, but you turn aside out of the way which I command you this day to go after other gods which you have not known. So the idea here is, and the reason why I emphasize this is because Rashi does too. You get this blessing and the curse that's being set out. You get the blessing up front. You're going to have the presumption of blessing. And it's only if you don't that the curse follows. All right. Next verse says, it will come to pass when Yehoyarel shall bring you into the land you're going in to get to possess it, so that you shall set the blessing upon Mount Gerizim, the curse upon Mount Ebal. So these two mountains, and essentially one is symbolic of the blessing, the other the curse. Are they not beyond the Jordan? Beyond the way of the going down of the sun, in other words, towards the west, in the land of the Canaanites that dwell in the Arabah over against Gilgal, besides the terebinths, the trees of Moreh. For you are to pass over the Jordan to go in and possess the land which Yehuyarel is giving you, and you shall possess it and dwell therein. And he says, you shall observe to do all of the statutes and the ordinances. So those statutes, of course, is a chuk, or plural, chukim, and the ordinances, ha-mishpatim, which I command you, I set before you this day. And the next chapter then says, these are those statutes and the ordinances which you shall observe it to do in the land which Yahuwah, the El of your fathers, has given you to possess it all the days that you live upon the earth. You shall, now this one is interesting, listen carefully here, you shall surely, utterly, completely, this is the peel conjugation, this is the emphatic, holy moly, we are really gonna make it emphatic, translation or conjugation of the verbs here. Now the next verse is gonna be similar, and I always enjoy the peel conjugation. I don't know that we have anything quite like it in English. What we have is, in English, is separate words. Whereas in the Hebrew, it's like the same word, it's just more emphatic. So, for example, the word to break, all right, we say you can break something. And then we can say, well, wait a minute, the peel conjugation, if it was the same word, would have the connotation of to smash it. How about to pulverize it to utter smithereens, all right? So that's the difference between the peel. It's a more emphatic, more action-oriented, if you want to picture colors, it's a bright-colored conjugation of the word. So that's why this is important. You shall utterly destroy, no halfway destroying here, all of the places where in these other nations that you're going to dispossess serve their gods, on the high mountains, upon the hills, under every leafy tree. And you shall, now here we go, a whole bunch of conjugations in the peel. In other words, the emphatic real action verb. You shall break down, overthrow, smash them to pieces, their altars, dash in pieces their pillars, burn down their asherim with fire, and you shall hew down the graven images of their gods. You get the idea? He hates them. He wants them smashed with a vengeance. And you shall destroy their name out of that place. Exterminate, blot out, do away with, utterly destroy. You shall not do anything like this. You shall not do so unto Yahuwah, your El. But unto the place which Yehuel will choose to put his name, out of all your tribes, even there, even unto his habitation you shall seek, and there you shall come. So he's going to pick a place. He'll let you know. And thither, or there, you shall bring your burnt offerings, your olah, your sacrifices, your tithes, the offering of your hand, your vows, your freewill offerings, the firstlings of your herd and of your flock. And there you shall eat before Yehuel, and you shall rejoice. Now here's another theme, and this is interesting too, given all the peel conjugations of destruction and tearing down these Asherim and these nasty places. This is a word that's going to appear some seven times in this parsha alone. Okay, and the word semach, simcha, there it's you hear all kinds of words in Hebrew. People probably are familiar with it. Hag Sameach, right? It's a holiday greeting. Basically, it's be joyful around this holiday. Have a great feast. Simcha Torah is the joy of Torah. So this idea of Sameach or Simcha, the same three-letter shoresh is in all of them, and it means rejoice. And that's what we're supposed to do. Rejoice in all that you put your hand to. You and your households, where your El Yahuwah has blessed you. Now, you shall not do after all that we do here this day, every man doing whatsoever is right in his own eyes, because you have not yet come to the rest and to the inheritance which Yahuwah your El is giving you. But when you do go over the Jordan and dwell in the land which Yahuwah your El causes you to inherit, then he will give you rest from all your enemies round about, so that you dwell in safety. Then it shall come to pass that the place which Yahuwah your El will choose to cause his name to dwell there. So he will pick a place, he'll put his name there. Thither you shall bring all that I command you. Your burnt offerings, your olah, your sacrifices, your tithes, the offering of your hand, all your choice vows which you vow unto Yahuwah. And there, here's that word again, there you shall smeach, rejoice before Yahuwah your El. It's the plural. It's shmeach tem. Y'all shall rejoice, plural, y'all form, before Yahuwah your El, you and your sons, your daughters, your manservants, your maidservants, the Levite that's within your gates, everybody, all of y'all. For as much as he has no portion or inheritance with you, so don't forget the Levites, take heed to yourself that you do not offer your burnt offerings in just any old place that you see, but in the place which Yahuwah shall choose in one of your tribes. So it'll be one of these 12 tribal areas. He will pick a place. There you shall offer your burnt offerings, and there you shall do all that I command you. Notwithstanding, you may kill and eat flesh within your gates, and all the desire of your soul, according to the blessing of which Yahuwah your El, which he's given you, the unclean and the clean, everybody, they may all eat of this, as of the gazelle and as of the hart. So we're going to eat things, in other words, these are clean animals that he names. Only you shall not eat the blood. This is going to be emphasized. Of course, we've heard it before. We're going to hear it again. The blood, the life is in the blood. You don't eat the blood. You pour it upon the earth like water. Now, as so that you may not eat within your gates the tithe of your corn, of your wine, or your oil, or the firstlings of your herd, or of your flock, or anything which you vowed, nor your freewill offerings, nor the offerings of your hand. But you shall eat them before Yahuwah your El in that place which Yahuwah your El shall choose. You, your son, your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, and the Levite that's within your gates. Here it is again. And you shall rejoice. Be filled with simcha before Yahuwah, your El, in all that you put your hand to. Now take heed to yourself that you don't forsake the Levite as long as you live upon the land. Remember, he does not have an inheritance. You've got to take care of him. Provide for him. When Yahuwah your El shall enlarge your border, as he's promised you, you'll say, I'd like to eat some flesh, because your soul desires to eat flesh. Well, you can do that. You can eat flesh, all the desire of your soul. You can have it. Now, if the place which Yahuwah your El shall choose to put his name, it's too far away from you, because this is a fairly good-sized land, and it takes days to get someplace, then you shall kill of your herd and of your flock, which Yahuwah has given you, so I have commanded you, and eat within your gates, after all the desire of your soul. Now, interesting, this is one of those places, and I usually try to give credit where it's due. As you know, I am I'm not a big believer in the so-called oral Torah. There is definitely an oral tradition. Question is, how accurate is it? How accurate has it been handed down? And certainly there are things that are called oral Torah that are commandments of the rabbis that I will contend are additions to what is written, and therefore not so good. On the other hand, this is one of the places where the sage Rashi notes that when he says here, you'll kill of your herd and of your flock, which he's given you, as I have commanded you, the question you want to ask is, well, where does he command that? In other words, kill how? So what Rashi claims, and it's at least a reasonable understanding, I don't know that that it's a proof, but it's certainly reasonable. He says, this is an indication that supports the oral Torah. In other words, the rabbis will tell you, as you have been told, and as he has commanded, how it's supposed to be done. In other words, what this ritual killing looks like, and how it's supposed to be done with the long, sharp blade and all that kind of jazz. Things that they have written down now, but at least at one time were transmitted orally. So he makes a good case. Because it does say, as I have commanded you, but we don't see the place where that has been commanded. So Rashi says, nope, that's the oral Torah. All right. How be it, as the gazelle and as the hart is eaten, so shall you eat thereof. The unclean and the clean may eat thereof alike. Only just be steadfast. And remember, he's repeated this already in the Torah portion once. This is the second time. Don't eat the blood. For the blood is the life. You shall not eat the life with the flesh. You shall not eat it. You shall pour it out upon the earth as water. You shall not eat it, he says it again, that it may go well with you and with your children after you, when you shall do that which is right in the eyes of Yahuwah. So remember, you hear the Brits talk about blood pudding or those kind of things, not even remotely kosher, anti-scriptural. Only your holy things, the things which are set apart, which you have, and your vows which you take, and you go unto the place which Yahuwah shall choose. And there, he says, you shall offer your burnt offerings, the flesh and the blood, upon the altar of Yahuwah your El, and the blood of your sacrifices shall be poured out against the altar of Yahuwah your El, and you shall eat the flesh. Observe and hear all of these words which I command you, that it may go well with you and with your children after you forever. When you do that which is good and right in the eyes of Yahuwah your El. And then it says, when Yahuwah your El shall cut off the nations from before you, that you go in to dispossess them, and you do that, you dispossess them, and you dwell in their land, take heed. So here's a warning, that you are not ensnared to follow after them. Now this is a warning that we can, in hindsight, recognize, uh-oh, it failed. The people failed, and they fell for this. So take heed that you're not ensnared to follow them after they're destroyed from before you, and you do not go out inquiring after their gods and say, hey, how did these folks, how did these nations serve their gods? I think I might do likewise. Right? They like bunnies and eggs. I'll get the bunnies and eggs. I'll get those Christmas trees, and I'll get all that other pagan crap, and I'll tell it, I'll Christianize it. Answer, don't. Do not do so. You shall not, he says it real clearly, you shall not do unto Yahuwah your El such a thing, because for every abomination to Yahuwah which he hates, bunnies and eggs and child sacrifices and Yule logs and trees, Halloween decorations, you name it, folks, we got all kinds of paganism all slipped in through the whore church and the whore synagogue, a lot of things that are not in accord with Scripture. He hates them. And it says here, he uses the word abomination. Remember, toiba is the Hebrew word. It is the strongest purgative of its kind in the language. There ain't no other word that is nastier than for something to be called an abomination unto Yahuwah. All these things, and here's another word that kind of puts it in perspective. He hates them. These things they have done unto their gods. For even their sons and their daughters, they burn in the fire to their gods. Chapter 13, the next one says, all of this word which I command you today you shall observe and do. Now, what's interesting to me, this is a place where I'll point out, we'll stop, we'll go very slowly here. In the English Bibles, this is often, most English Bibles, this is chapter 12, verse 32. Okay, it's the last verse in chapter 12. So that's how I usually tell people to find it. It's the second place in the Torah, Deuteronomy chapter 4 is the first place we see it, where he says, do not add to nor subtract from the word. Okay, here's what I wrote down. Don't add to it. Don't subtract from it. And, of course, we have the whore church and the whore synagogue have made literal careers out of doing exactly that. Rabbis love to add to it. The whore church loves to subtract from it. Oh, sun god day? Yeah, we like that better than his. We'll get rid of his Sabbath. We'll put something else in there instead. He says, don't eat the blood. We'll say it's fine. He says, don't eat pork. And we say it's fine. So they will basically subtract from his commandments, whereas the rabbis will say, oh, we're going to put fences around all of it. He's got, seven or so commandments for Sabbath. We got 1,700. How about that? Either way, it is an addition. It is a subtraction. It is a, well, it's a failure. Here's how he puts it in this place, the second time it's repeated. All of this word, kol, which I command you, that you shall observe and do. You shall not add thereto, nor diminish from. Don't add to it, don't subtract from it. Now, if there arises, now this part, by the way, chapter 13 is kind of the false prophet chapter. So if you're going to point to folks and say, hey, where is a place where we can see a warning about a false Messiah, and how we can distinguish the false from the real one, not Jesus that did away with the law, because he would in fact be, according to Deuteronomy 13 here, a false Messiah. Problem is, if we understand what the real one did, his name Yeshua, he didn't violate anything that's in this chapter. That is the key. So let's go through it carefully. If there arises in your midst a prophet, or a dreamer of dreams, and he gives you a sign or a wonder. So got some alleged prophet. And look at this, says the sign or wonder comes to pass. Things that he told you, saying, let's go after other gods. Gods which you've not known, let us serve them. Oops. So even, in other words, if he says something that it comes to pass, it's true. But if he's saying go after other gods, do not hearken unto that prophet. Don't listen to him. Or unto that dreamer of dreams. Because Yahuwah, you know what he's doing? He's testing you. To see whether or not you love Yahuwah your El with all your heart and with all your soul. Now, you'll notice that when we look at Yeshua and what he did, he was very careful not to add to nor subtract from. He never said go after other gods. And one of the things that we'll have people telling us is, oh, he added to and he subtracted from, and he basically was a replacement god. They don't like the God of the Old Testament. We got this new one. That was the Marcion heresy. Folks, that is an abomination from the pit of hell. That is not Yeshua. And it's very, very clear if we'll study what he wrote for us and the tests that he gave us so that we are not fooled. So, he says, go after other fake gods, gods that you've not known. Don't hearken to him. Yahuwah is testing you. See if you understand the real, the ability to distinguish. And that is how we can distinguish whether the real Yeshua, as opposed to a fake Jesus, was in fact the Mashiach. If he did away with his own word, he's a liar and the truth is not in him. He's a fake. He deserved to die. On the other hand, because the real one said he wasn't changing one yod or tittle, and he never did, and he was very careful about it, we can recognize the truth from the lie. And it's part of the reason a lot of times folks say, well, the word Jesus. Well, the word Jesus didn't exist for 16 centuries until afterwards. But that's not the real problem that I have. The reason why I very much prefer and will almost always try to use Yeshua, his real name, is not only because nobody ever called him that for 16 centuries. His mama didn't call him that. Nobody ever did. It's because the word Jesus has become associated with a fake who, what, nailed the law to the cross, did away with it, and therefore could not be. He would be, under this chapter, disqualified. And so that is why it is vitally important that we are able to distinguish, rightly divide the word of truth, and recognize the real from the fake. So, if the fake comes and you're suckered into it, it says, Yah's testing you, seeing whether you love him with all your heart and with all your soul. After Yahuwah Yireh, you shall walk. After him, you shall fear. His commandments you shall keep. See, if Jesus did away with the law, he's a fake. This says, his commandments you shall keep. His voice you shall hearken to. Him you shall serve, and unto him you shall cleave. As for that prophet or that dreamer of dreams, he deserves to die. So there is the vital distinction. Yeshua, if he was, and he was who he said he was, did not deserve to die, but he was put to death in our place. On the other hand, if he was a fake, if he did away with his own word, if he changed Sun God Day and made that the new replacement for the Sabbath, if he did away with all the rules about the diets and marriage and you name it, he was a fake, and he was rightfully put to death. The problem? We recognize the story. He was righteous. He was sinless. When you see what was going on here and you compare, The difference is not only crucial, the difference is vital to our understanding of who the very Messiah is. Because the fake here, it says, that prophet, that dreamer of dreams, deserves to be put to death. He shall be, because he has spoken perversion against Yehuyarel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt and redeemed you out of the house of bondage to draw you aside out of the way which Yehuyarel commanded you to walk in. Now, notice an interesting term in there. I love this verse. That prophet, that dreamer of dreams, is trying to draw you out of the way which Yehuyarel commanded you to walk. Now, you remember? Now, a lot of Christians don't even know this. During the time that Yeshua walked the earth, they were never called Christians. He was the Messiah. He was the Torah made flesh. But he wasn't. The word Christian didn't even exist, and it's not even clear exactly when it came into play, but it was a long time afterwards. Well, what they were, those who followed the Messiah, they were called, everybody, raise your hand if you know the answer. They were called followers of the way. He said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. So, they are trying to draw you aside out of the way which Yehuyarel commanded you to walk. This is precisely why the real Messiah is, in fact, the way. He walked in the way. So, it says, you shall put away the evil from the midst of you. Now, here we get the rubber meets the road understanding of this. He is trying to make a point, and he makes it graphically. All right? I don't care who it is, basically, is what this next paragraph says. If it's your brother, the son of your mother, or your own son, or your own daughter, or the wife of your bosom, or your friend that's kind of like your own soul, like Jonathan and David, and he comes to you secretly and says, hey, let's go serve other gods, which you've not known, not you or your fathers. Or how about the gods of the people that are around you? You know, Christmas and Ishtar and bunnies and eggs and all. Let's go after these fake gods. Don't care whether they're near to you or far off from you, from one end of the earth to the other end of the earth. You shall not consent to him. You get it? I don't care who it is. Your brother, your best friend, your wife even. You shall not hearken to him, you shall not consent to him, nor shall your eye pity him. Uh-oh, you see where this is headed? Nor shall you spare, nor shall you conceal him. He's brought his own guilt on his own head. But, uh-oh, you ready for this? You shall surely kill him. Wow. Do you get the idea here? This is serious stuff. This is, folks, exactly what ex-Christianity has perverted and turned the Messiah into something who, if people really believe that he came to do away with the law, nail it to the cross, he deserved to die. Whoa! He's no Savior at all. That is why it is so important that we get this right. The real one as opposed to the fake. The one who was, in fact, sinless because he never violated his own Torah. He never changed one yod or one tittle. He said so. And he said it wouldn't change even, long as heaven and earth still exist. He was utterly consistent. It's just that we've been fed a lie, another Jesus, as Paul put it, whom we've not preached. What are we supposed to do with that one? Well, that one, folks, if, in fact, Jesus did do away with the Torah, he deserved to die. His blood doesn't count for squat. Not only that, it says, even if this is your brother or your wife, your own bosom, you shall surely kill him. Your hand shall be the first upon him to put him to death. Afterwards, everybody else, the hand of all the people. And you shall stone him with stones so that he dies. Because he has sought to draw you away from Yehuyarel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. How is that for a, straight up, undeniable, in your face, wow, what kind of crap have we been fed by the whore church for so long? If Jesus did away with the law, he deserved to die. Yeah, you heard that right. The real Messiah, the one who was the Torah made flesh, did not ever. He did not change so much as one yod or tittle. By the way, he wasn't a liar. He did exactly what he said he would do. And all Israel, Kol Israel, shall hear and shall fear and shall do no more such wickedness as this in the midst of you. Now, if you'd hear tell concerning any of your cities, which Yehuyarel has given you to dwell there, all right, so now we're going to move to another aspect of paganism, and you hear that certain sons of Belial, The rendering I'm looking at says base fellows, but literally it's Benai Belial, Belial. Sons of Belial have gone out from the midst of you, and they've drawn away the inhabitants of the city, and they've said, hey, let's do exactly what the whore church is talking about doing. Let's go serve other gods, which you've not known. Another Jesus, whom we've not preached. One that did away with the law. Well, you inquire, you make search, you ask diligently, and behold, if the thing is made certain, if they really are doing that, that such abomination is being wrought in the midst of you, well, surely... Whoa, what's this getting ready to say? Yep, you're hearing it right. Surely you smite the inhabitants of the city with the mouth of the sword. Lefi cherev. They deserve to die. The mouth of the sword is the thing that eats the blood of the pagans. This whole city deserves to die. This is serious stuff. He does not like this. I guess that would be Vatican City? Oh, wow. I mean, think about the implications of this, folks. We don't like to think about it because people say, oh, well, you know, live and let live, and it's all Christianity. Well, if it's all Christianity, then it's all pagan. We have got to recognize there is a distinction to be made between the real Messiah and the fake. One is the true Messiah. By his blood we are saved. The other deserved to die, and his blood doesn't count for squat. By the way, the other one never really existed. It was a fake made up by the whore church all along. And isn't that ironic, too? All right? So, if we find out about this city, though, you smite the inhabitants of the city with lefi cherev, the mouth of the sword, destroying it utterly, and everything that's therein, and even all the cattle therein, with the mouth of the sword. And you shall gather all the spoil of it in the midst, in a broad place. And you burn it with fire. The whole city, and all the spoil, everything in it, unto Yehuyarel. It shall be a heap forever. It shall not be built again. I mean, I hadn't thought about it until just now. Is he really suggesting that would have been the fate of Vatican City had we recognized the level of paganism that was there, and that indeed is still there? There shall nothing cleave of the devoted thing to your hand. Now, devoted is an interesting word. It's cherem in Hebrew. And something can be devoted to Yod-Heh, Vav-Heh. It can be devoted to the Creator, like, you know, some of the implements of the Mishkan, for example, or things that are devoted to Him, things that might be, I'm not sure if people, I don't know if I've seen the word used for people, but things that essentially are devoted to paganism are, on the one hand, very, very different from things that are devoted to the Creator of the universe. So, if something is devoted to the pagan fake gods, you don't put it in your hand. So that Yahuwah may turn from the fierceness of his anger and show you mercy and have compassion upon you and multiply you as he swore unto your fathers. In other words, you don't take that devoted to pagan stuff, don't take it home. When you shall hearken to the voice of Yehuyarel to keep, well, we know this, all his commandments, which I command you this day, to do that which is right in the eyes of Yehuyarel. You are the children of Yehuyarel. You shall not cut yourselves. Oh, all right. Now, we've had literally an epidemic of this over the last few years. Kids with tattoos and cuttings and so forth. There is an element of a death cult here, which is very, very, very unsavory, and certainly ought to be like alarm bells. I've seen it for years at this point. They've got a name for it. They call it cutting. And if you look and you see some of the things that are going on, you go, wow, do you think there's a pagan element here? I mean, isn't it obvious from the clothes and the tattoos and the piercings and all the other stuff, the disfigurements that some of these kids are doing when they cut themselves? Nor make any baldness between your eyes for the dead. Because you are set apart, kadosh, holy, unto Yehuyarel, and Yehuyarel has chosen you to be his own treasure out of all the peoples that are upon the face of the earth. Now we're going to get a list of more commandments here. You shall not eat any abominable thing. Here are the beasts which you may eat. And of course we're going to see again the second rendering of what is food and what is not food. You'll hear it called kosher. And kosher is an okay word, kashrut, but I really just prefer to think of it as, you want a simpler understanding, there are animals that are not for food, pig is among them, and there are animals that are. Let's not confuse them. There are animals that the Creator put here for a specific purpose. Maybe as guard dogs or beasts of burden or something, but not for food. Maybe as garbage cleaners, and that's what pigs are. They're the garbage cleaners of the land. All right, here are the beasts which you can eat. The ox, the sheep, and the goat. The hart, the gazelle, the roebuck, and the wild goat, and the piagarg. I'm not sure what that is. It's probably a little horn thing that looks like a goat, though. And the antelope and the mountain sheep. And every beast that parts the hoof and has the hoof wholly cloven in two. So you look at a goat's hoof, it has two little hoofies. And they're separated. You can put your finger in there. And we do when we, trim their hooves. And it chews the cud. So the requirement is has both. It's real simple. The logic is easy. It has to have both. Has one or has the other, doesn't count. It's got to have both. It's got to have a cloven hoof, and it has to chew the cud among the beasts. If it does, you can eat it. It's food. Nevertheless, you shall not eat of them that do one but not the other. In other words, if they only chew the cud, or they only have a cloven hoof, things that are like that, the camel, the hare, the rock badger, all right, they chew the cud, but rabbits have little feet, right? The camel and the rock badger, they don't have a parted hoof, so they are not food. They are unclean to you. The swine. Now, the swine is kind of unique, the pig. And the rabbis will say the swine is the most deceptive of all animals. That's probably why he's the gnarliest and the nastiest, and it's true. Pig is about the nastiest thing you can eat. You want to catch a disease? Eat pig. And the reason they'll claim it is because he is a deceptive fellow. You walk up to him, he looks like he's kosher. He's got a parted hoof. But he does not chew the cud. He just eats dead stuff. So he is unclean. Matter of fact, he is massively unclean. And if we read specifically here, we're going to see there's a different distinction for the pig than there is the other unclean animals. In this case, it says, when it comes to pig, he's unclean to you. Of their flesh you shall not eat. Okay, well, that's fine. We know that. And their carcasses you shall not touch. Wow. All right, that's unlike bunnies and dogs and camels. This says you don't even touch their carcasses. So, pig skin, right? Football. Honestly? Wow. All right, these are the things now that you can eat that are in the waters. Got a different criteria from the waters. Anything that has both fins and scales is food. You can eat it. Whatever has not fins and scales you shall not eat. It is unclean. It is not food. Of all the clean birds you may eat, but here are the things which you shall not eat. Now, birds, we don't have a general rule, but there is kind of a pattern. Now, I'm always careful with patterns. If I look at a pattern and point one out, understand this is markology. This is my judgment, and it's not explicitly scriptural. It's just my observations, take it or leave it. But if you look at this list, you're going to see there are certain characteristics they do seem to have in common. In other words, these birds that you shall not eat. Listen to this list. The great vulture, the bearded vulture, the osprey, the gleed, the falcon, the kite. These are carrion birds. These are meat-eating birds. Well, right there. That seems to be a part of the pattern. The raven after its kind, the ostrich, the nighthawk, and the sea mew, and the hawk after its kinds, more birds of prey among them. The great owl, the little owl, the horned owl, the pelican, the carrion vulture, the cormorant, more meat eaters, the stork, the heron after its kind, and the hoopoe, and the bat. And bats, by the way, some of them will say bats are mammals. They're not even birds in the same category, but in any case, they're still not food regardless. Anything that's winged and swarming are unclean to you. They shall not be eaten. Of all the winged things you may eat, they're clean. You should not eat anything that dies of itself. You may give it unto the stranger that's within your gates. He can eat it. Yeah, Mikey likes it. He'll eat it. Or you can sell it to a foreigner, because you're a set apart people unto you. You shall not seethe a kid in its mother's milk. Interesting, right? And that one scratches, people scratch their heads about that, and they say, is this why you're not allowed to have milk and eggs, or milk and meat in the same meal? Honestly, I don't see the connection there. But the best understanding I've seen is that, this was a pagan practice that was done, and it was forbidden. But admittedly, this one, that's a little bit of a head-scratcher for most modern folks. But obviously what it says is, don't do it, so don't. You shall surely tithe all the increase of your seed, which is brought forth in the field year by year. And you shall eat before Jehoiarib in the place which he shall choose to put his name. He causes his name to dwell there. The tithe of your corn, your wine, your oil, the firstlings of your herd, of your flock, that you may learn to fear Jehoiarib always. So that tithe, that tenth of those things that you're giving, and usually that ends up going to the Levite. And if the way is too long for you, so you're not able to carry it, in other words, the place where he's put his name is a long ways away, and you can't carry all this livestock, well, then Yahuwah has set his name there, and when he blesses you, you can, in fact, sell it, turn it into kesef, silver. So exchange it for silver, bind up the money in your hand, so the idea is that the money's easier to carry, it's small, it's light. And then you go unto the place which you or else shall choose, and when you get there, you can buy whatever you want with that kesef. Anything your soul desires. Oxen, sheep, wine, even strong drink. What? Yeah. It's not forbidden. Or for whatever your soul asks of you, and you shall eat there before Jehoiarib, and you shall, ready? Here's that word. You shall semach, rejoice before Yahuwah, you and your household. Now, the Levites are within your gates. Don't forget him. He has no portion or inheritance with you. At the end of every 3 years, in the same year, you shall bring forth all of your tithe of your increase, lay it up within your gates. And the Levite, because he hasn't got a portion or inheritance with you, and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow that are within your gates, they come, they'll eat and be satisfied, that Jehoiarib may bless you in all the work of your hand, which you do. Now, at the end of every 7 years, you make a release. Here's how it works. Every creditor shall release that which he's lent to his neighbor. He does not exact it of his neighbor or his brother, because Yahuwah's release has been proclaimed. So 7 years, the debts are forgiven. Of a foreigner, you can exact it. But whoso whatsoever of yours is with your brother, your hand shall release. Now, howbeit, there shall be no needy among you, for Yahuwah will surely bless you in the land which he's given you for an inheritance to possess it, if only you will diligently hearken to the voice of Jehoiarib, to observe to do, kol, all of this commandment which I command you this day. For Jehoiarib will bless you as he has promised you. You'll lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. You shall rule over many nations, but they shall not rule over you. If there is among you a needy man, one of his brethren, within any of your gates in the land which Jehoiarib gives you, you shall not harden your heart, nor shut your hand from your needy brother, but you shall open your hand to him. Surely lend him sufficient for his need in that which he wants. Now remember, this says lend. But understand, it's lend with a little bit different understanding than often Americans tend to have. Beware, don't have a base start in your heart saying, whoa, wait, the seventh year's coming up, it's only a year away. If I lend it to him, he's not going to pay it back, so I'm not going to lend it. The year of release is at hand. And don't let your eye be evil against your needy brother, and don't give him anything, therefore. And he cries to Yahuwah against you, and it would be sin for you. You shall surely, it says, give him, and your heart shall not be grieved when you give unto him. Don't begrudge him. Because that, for this thing, Jehoiarib will bless you in all your work, in all that you put your hand to. In other words, don't worry about it. You will be blessed for walking unto in a way that he has told you to. You shall surely give to him. Your heart will not be grieved, because this is what will cause you to be blessed in all you put your hand to. For the poor will never cease. Remember, Yeshua repeated this. Out of the land, therefore, I command you, saying, you shall surely open your hand to your poor and needy brother in the land. Now, if your brother, an Ivri, a Hebrew man or a Hebrew woman, is sold unto you, in other words, you buy a bondservant, not a slave, but a bondservant, he serves you for 6 years. Seventh year, you let him go free. And when you let him go free, you do not even send him out empty-handed. You furnish him liberally out of your flock, out of your threshing floor, out of your winepress. Or with whatever Yahuwah has blessed you, you shall give of that unto him. And you shall remember, you too were a bondsman in the land of Egypt, Mitzrayim, and Jehoiarib redeemed you. Therefore, I command you to do likewise this day, this thing. And it shall be, if he says to you, I don't want to go out. Because he loves you, and he loves your house, and he's been happy, and he has fared well with you. Then, all right, we've heard this process before. It's in Exodus chapter 21. You take an awl, you bore it through his ear into the doorpost. So you literally punch the awl through his earlobe into the doorpost, and he shall be your bondsman forever. And also unto your bondswoman, you shall do likewise. By the way, for those that haven't heard it, this is where the custom of the earring comes. And it's always kind of interesting. I wonder when I see guys, especially now with earrings, do they understand that that is an indication of that they're a bondsman, especially if they just wear it in one ear. All right. It shall not seem hard to you when you let him go free from you, but for to the double of the hire of the hiring, he has served you 6 years, and Yehoiarel will bless you in all that you do. So he has served you. Don't begrudge him the getaway gifts. All the firstling males that are born of your herd and of your flock, you shall set apart unto Yehoiarel. They shall do no work with the firstling of your ox or the firstling of your flock. You shall eat it before Yahuwah in the year by year in the place which Yahuwah chooses, you and your household. Now, if there's any blemish or lameness or blindness, that blemish, you shall not sacrifice that animal unto Yahuwah your El. You will eat it within your gates. The unclean and the clean alike may eat it, the gazelle, the hart. Only, remember, you shall not eat the blood. You just pour it upon the ground as if it was water. Chapter 16 is going to talk about some of the feasts again. And it says here, observe the month of Abib, and keep the Passover, the Pesach, unto Yahuwah. For in the month of Abib, Yehoiarel brought you out of the land of Mitzrayim by night. And you shall sacrifice the Pesach offering unto Yahuwah, your El, of the flock and of the herd, in the place which Yahuwah shall cause his name to dwell there. You'll eat no leavened bread with it 7 days. You eat unleavened bread, the blood of affliction, because in haste you came forth out of the land of Egypt, that you may remember the day when you came forth out of the land of Mitzrayim for all the days of your life. There shall be no leaven seen with you in all your borders for 7 days, nor shall any of the flesh which you sacrifice the first day at evening remain all night until the morning. So you don't leave it overnight. You may not sacrifice the Passover offering with any of your gates which Yehoiarel gives you, but you do it at the place where Yahuwah shall choose to put his name, to cause his name to dwell there. There it is that you shall sacrifice the Pesach at evening, at the going down of the sun, at the season that you came forth out of Mitzrayim. So this is the one of the what's called Feasts of Ascension. You go there, do it where he says. And you shall roast and eat it in the place which Yehoiarel shall choose, and you shall turn in the morning and go unto your tents. 6 days you eat unleavened bread. On the seventh day is a day of solemn assembly unto Yahuwah. You shall do no work in that one. 7 weeks from there you shall number. From the time the sickle is first put to the standing corn, you begin to number 7 weeks. And you keep the Feast of Weeks, Shavuot, unto Yehoiarel, after the measure of the freewill offering of your hand, which Yahuwah, which you shall give according to as Yahuwah has blessed you. And here it is again. And you shall rejoice before Yehoiarel, you, and your son, and your daughter, and your manservant, and your maidservant, and the Levite that's within your gates, and the stranger, and the fatherless, and the widow that are in the midst of you, in the place which Yehoiarel shall cause his name to dwell there. And you shall remember, you too, were a bondsman in Egypt, and you shall observe to do these statutes. You shall keep the Feast of Tabernacles, Sukkot, Booths, 7 days, after you've gathered in your threshing floor and from your wine press. So this is basically the harvest feast. You shall rejoice, there it is again, in that feast. You, your son, your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, and the Levite, along with what else, right? The stranger, the fatherless, the widow that are within your gates. 7 days you keep that feast unto Yahuwah your El in the place which Yahuwah your El shall choose, because Yahuwah your El shall bless you in all your increase, in all the work of your hands, and you shall be altogether, right? Say it with me. Simach, Simcha, joyful. 3 times in the year. So we've just had the recap of those 3 times. The Feasts of Ascension, they're usually called. 3 times in a year, all of your males shall appear before Yahuwah, your El, in that place which he shall choose. On the Feast of Unleavened Bread, all right, that's associated with the Passover. On the Feast of Weeks and the Feast of Tabernacles. And you shall not appear before Yahuwah empty or empty-handed. Every man shall give as he's able, according to the blessing with which Yahuwah has given you. And with that, folks, the Torah portion ends. So it's a lengthy Torah portion. Lots going on there. And I think it's interesting. I always thought it was kind of, memorable, perhaps, that the portion is called Re'eh, because it really means see, behold, or check it out. And there are a lot of elements in here, and many of them are things we've heard before. But in every case, they're things that, while they may be surprising, We've actually heard them more than once. And the fact that they're surprising is more of an indication of how we have not done what we're supposed to have been doing than it is that they really should have been a surprise at all.